The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back as we head into Hour 3. It is a delight to do so with Congressman John Shattuck. John Shattuck represented old Arizona Congressional District 4 for 16 years in Congress. That's the area from whence we broadcast in Phoenix and surrounding parts. He joins us most Wednesdays when he is in town. Former chairman of the Republican Study Committee, which was considered kind of the conservative caucus of
That's
the
right.
Republicans.
It was the right-wingers.
Yeah, those were the conservatives. So I was thinking on the way in, John, something that's been bothering me, and I don't know where to land on this. You can work it out in your voice with me, perhaps, in the audience. I think about where today's Democratic Party is. Local to national. Our governor has called Republicans neo-Nazis. You have the second largest Democratic Party or club in Arizona down in Tucson that has an F the 4th of July party. But
really?
They spell it out. They have a vice president who has bailed out and supported rioters. They nominate people to the Supreme Court who can't define what a woman is. They think 1776 was not our founding date. On and on and on. Soft on crime, all this kind of stuff. Shouldn't we, on the one hand, be going into this? Oh, and a president who's just not there. I'm sorry, he's not there. Shouldn't we be going into this election running away? And is it possible that this election will be running away? Now, most of the polling shows that Donald Trump is up by about 2 or 3 points. My prejudice on that part of the equation is there's a Bradley effect where people are less likely to say they support Donald Trump than they really are, perhaps. The pollsters probably are not mostly pro-Trump, so perhaps they're jiggering it to not make it look as big as possible. Or are those polls fairly close to right? This country is so dang divided that it's going to be a race that's going to be fought hammer and tong to the very end and very close. I can't answer the question. I thought it might be fun to hear what you think about that. If I made sense. Did my question make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Made perfect sense. Great to be here. Glad to be with you. Fun discussion. In this case, you know, I often play the politician game and say, well, on the one hand and on the other hand, and give the arguments. In this case, I'm going to be much more direct than that. I'll go this far. I am absolutely convinced and fearful that it is as close as it appears to be. And I think the reason for that is a combination of two things. The leftist education that's been presented in the United States for the last, we'll say, 20 plus years, maybe more than that, pretty much after you and I got out of high school, maybe even sometime after we got out of college, which just tilted left all the time and now is just openly, unabashedly left and lies to the electorate every day. One of the things I discovered when I lived in Washington, D.C. to serve in Congress was most neighborhoods on that side of the nation tilt left. And if you want to get along and be collegial with your neighbors, you better tilt left. And if you want to speak out in favor of conservatism or pick your person, Ronald Reagan, Jack Kemp, anybody on the right, you better be prepared to defend yourself and you better enjoy arguments. So part of it is the media is so far to the left. And I think that's a huge factor. The other reason that I think it is as close as it appears, and I'm with you, I do not understand why Trump is not walking away with it, though I'll grant you that his personality pulls him down. But you would think his philosophy would still put him well ahead of where he is right now. Where he is right now scares me. It scares me because if he campaigns for the next 8 months, the longest presidential campaign they're telling us in a very long time, he's his own worst enemy. He's the guy that alienates people. It's not others that alienate him. Joe Biden's not going to lay a hand on him. Joe Biden's going to be, need to be woken up most of the time in order to give his pitch. But second, what can he pitch? I mean, in the State of the Union, he yelled at us the whole time, and then he said things that are simply incredulous. He said everybody's doing fine economically. That's a farce. They're not.
But I can't believe when I hear people say this.
It's unbelievable.
I see Bill Maher say it all the time. We're doing fine. Well, if you're a multimillionaire, maybe.
Right. He said we're safer than when he took office.
Palpably untrue.
Unbelievable. I was in a store in California 2 weekends ago on a Sunday morning, and the young man who was helping me asked if he could excuse himself for a minute because there was somebody stealing stuff at the front of the store and he needed to go deal with it. And when he came back, I said, how often does that happen? And he said, all day, every day. And he said, because it's not a crime. And I said, what do you mean it's not a crime? Well, he said, technically it's a crime, but in California, if it's less than $800, and this guy had less than $800 worth of stuff, the police won't do a thing about it.
Because they've reduced it to a misdemeanor and it's just too much of a suck up of their energy. Yeah.
So number one in large categories is is education and the press combined. But number two is ultimately, if you have an ill-informed public, then they're going to take over or join with the left because the left promises them something for nothing. And for decades and more in America, the American public saw that getting something for nothing doesn't happen and that it wouldn't work. And that if government purported to give them all kinds of things for free, they would ultimately see through it, or they would see through it immediately and say, no, that's not true. They can't give me a free phone and pay for my lodging and pay for my food without raising somebody's taxes and ultimately mine. So, yeah, I am very worried that we are not way out in luff, way out ahead, and that and I am concerned and awaiting the voice of the American public on whether they see through this guy or don't.
I'm not sure if it was you telling me the story the other day or our friend, mutual friend Steve, or someone else was telling me the story in these retail theft situations like the one you witnessed. Someone was telling us that one of the store clerks said he actually wasn't, as company policy allowed, to call the police. Was it you telling me the story, or you've heard stories like this?
I told you the story, but it was from a friend of mine who had walked into a drugstore in the same area of San Diego where I had been. And as he was walking in, he noticed someone kind of coming from the back of the store and walking out and stealing arms full of stuff. And this friend of mine was standing in front of the checkout person at the time. And he said, aren't you going to do something? That person's obviously stealing all that stuff. And the checkout person said, no.
Yeah.
If I go interfere with that person stealing all that stuff, I will be fired.
Yeah. Yeah. Company policies are now to suppress reporting theft, retail theft. And one has to think a little bit about what's backstopping that, or what's in back of those policies. These stores don't want to be known in the community as tough on crime, or they feel like they have to prostrate themselves in front of the community. You remember a few years back, it became policy at Starbucks to allow anyone to use their restrooms.
Yep.
There was a policy that only a customer, and we used to see signs, restrooms for customers only. And Starbucks got in trouble for that because some manager escorted out someone who was trying to use the restroom who wasn't a customer. So they changed company-wide the policy. Anyone can use our restrooms. So they became effectively a public park. That didn't last very long because that public park became a place of, discarded needles, needles exchanges, harassment, and, filth. So they had to change it. We have to take a commercial break. We'll come right back. But as a theme for the campaign, you raise an interesting question. Everyone says it's immigration and the economy. I wonder if crime might be a part of this. And I'm thinking, a little bit about the 1988 race, which was Bush v. Dukakis, Bush Sr. v. Dukakis. And as I remember it, there were two main issues. It was crime. Everyone thinks of Willie Horton. Well, we have it with Lake and Riley, the Georgia nursing student. That also brings in the illegal alien issue. But patriotism, too. I remember it was a big deal with Dukakis and the flag. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, coming to you from the 960 Patriot Broadcast Studios, which are brought to you by the veteran-owned Midas Gold Group, your trusted source for precious metals. My trusted source for precious political thought is Congressman John Shattuck, now the head of Shattuck Associates, LLC. John, I
respond.
Huh? Go ahead.
You may be surprised by my answer, and you are.
Oh yeah, let me reset it up. Okay. Yeah, okay, let me set it up. So I often look to previous campaigns and the themes of previous campaigns, because it seems every presidential campaign kind of has a theme to the pudding. Sometimes two, but usually there's a leitmotif to the campaign. I was just thinking, you were talking about crime, and the last time I remember that being a really big deal was 1988, Bush Sr. versus Dukakis, and Willie Horton was kind of the example at the time. We have something similar with the illegals and certain Lake and Riley's murderer. It was also about patriotism. I remember, Dukakis had vetoed a bill to have the Pledge of Allegiance in the schools. Patriotism is all over the place here, with Biden saying we're a threat to democracy, with us saying we're trying to make America great again, all that. So I just wonder if that is going to – do you think these are themes to exploit during this campaign, or do I err in thinking about previous campaigns because we're a different country?
I think we are a very different country, but I think that doesn't mean some of those themes won't resonate again.
Some of that blood still flows, right?
Absolutely. Okay. And I think the answer is actually cultural change. Quite frankly, the answer to the question you asked about why nobody does anything when somebody steals something, where the store clerks are told, don't do anything, quite frankly, is two things. It's a pattern of conduct, and I'll explain that in a minute, versus corporate policy and tort law. And the pattern of conduct is violence. In the 1950s or 60s, and I'm sorry to throw back to the old days, but it's true, so you can't just...
I think 1776 is still true.
There
we're
we
okay.
Go.
Yeah.
If a thief was caught shoplifting or stealing in some other way, they responded by understanding they were caught, and they wouldn't immediately resort to violence. The cultural change in America today, I think, significantly in response to the decline in religion or religious belief or in a greater authority, is violence is just fine. And so if I'm caught in the act of committing a crime, I don't just surrender. I engage in violence. And that might mean that instead of doing the crime alone, I do it with others. So I have a group of people to engage in that violence. Yeah. But I think that's a huge part of it. And then, of course, there's corporate policy. And the corporations say, well, in light of, or business owners say, in light of this response, violence, and in light of tort law, which says if you're working for somebody and you engage in some activity that either you were told to do or it was implied that you would do, and you get hurt, well, then you have the right to sue the company and recover a huge judgment. So the Walgreens clerk that I mentioned, I'm sure had been told that if he intercepted or tried to stop some thief or shoplifter in the act and got hurt, well, he was in violation of company policy, so Walgreens is not legally liable. And I think both of those are huge. The other thing I think is, and we've talked about this before, we used to view ourselves as Americans. And a lot of the activity we engaged in because we saw ourselves as Americans. And we had a group identity that brought us together as a people. We now have identity politics, which says, oh, we're not Americans anymore. We're Italian Americans, or we're Hispanic Americans, or we're whatever. And that has led to kind of a, well, it's me versus them. And if identity politics teaches that if the kids in one group in our neighborhood did better in school, well, that must have been not as a result of studying harder. It was a result of pre-existing societal bias.
Privilege,
and therefore, and so, well, if they're going to be out for them, then I'm permitted to be out for me. So it's okay if I punch back at the clerk, or if I wave my gun at him, or if I shoot into the ceiling. Maybe not okay if I kill him, but okay if I violently resist. And I think in this election, crime is either going to be or should be a very big issue, because people are genuinely scared. By and large, they're moving out of the cities.
And not shopping as much. I mean, if these big box stores or any box store of any size wants to, wants to wonder why people are relying more and more on Amazon and its ancillary copycats, in part, it's convenience, yes. But in part, people stopped feeling safe going to these stores. And a lot of that is driven by, of course, the tolerance of the culture, which is now anti-cop in too many places, but also the tolerance and perhaps the surrender of the corporate culture that you were talking
about. They go right along with it. And in some cases, they try to buy peace by catering to various organizations which are making demands or engaging in violence, the reaction to a lot of crime today.
I want to make a nexus or float a theory about a nexus between your point on hyphenating Americans and what was the phrase you used? You used
identity politics.
Identity politics.
I have a rant or a strong belief about the damage identity politics has done to the nation.
Well, I'm going to invite you to deliver it on the other side of this break, perhaps. But the thesis I wanted to float by you is the reduction, the vitiation of the importance of just being an American, as that being enough, as that being a thing to be proud of and enough, now being a something American, an XYZ American, an ABC hyphen American, getting into the identity politics, has served, it seems to me, to fuel some of the left-wing liberal position on illegal immigration. It has served in a way to attenuate the importance of America itself as this being a place worthy of protecting. It has served, I think, as an animating force for Joe Biden, who last week called the murderer of Lincoln Riley an illegal, to be forced to change that to say,
I had to apologize.
Well, yeah,
we can't call him an illegal.
Let me pick up on that with you when we come back.
Stunning.
I think there's something tied together in that stew. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Congressman John Shattuck, my guest. He is the head and founder of Shattuck & Associates here in town. Former congressman, serving 16 years in Congress. You were making a point about identity politics, where everyone is something else before they're an American. You name it, American, a Jewish American, a Hispanic American, a Asian American, a Mexican American. I could go down the list.
Right.
People know
all the hyphenated.
Right. All the hyphenated. I'm wondering if that served to attenuate, weaken the notion of this is a place worthy of sovereignty and protection, such that we now have a mindset in that has the vice grip of the Democratic Party, where we can't even call someone who comes into this country illegally and commits murder against someone who was born here, Lake and Riley, let us say, you can't even call them illegal without having to issue a retraction to the word undocumented. Just let me hang an asterisk on that note for a second, because I don't think it's insignificant. About that murderer of Lake and Riley, by any definition, including the federal law, he was here illegally.
Right.
We actually don't know if he was undocumented. He certainly had some kind of documentation. Anyway, that's a side note, not unimportant, but a side note. Is this fueling the problem we have with understanding the problem of illegal immigration?
I'm not even sure if it's fueling the problem or if it isn't evidence.
It might
of
be
the
symptomatic.
Problem.
Yeah.
The reality is we no longer are urged to be proud of American or to be proud of being Americans, to be proud of America. We are told we're just some other nation. We had a president who said, well, America is unique or what was the word?
Exceptional.
Exceptional.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah.
America is exceptional just like France is exceptional,
right.
Which
Barack
is to
Obama.
Say,
yeah.
Right, Barack Obama, which is to say America isn't exceptional.
Right.
And I think that identity politics has it slipped in a way that has eroded how people think of the country. I will bet you that growing up, all of us heard America described with some pretty frequent regularity as a melting pot.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we all came here and joined the great American melting pot. And the melting pot meant we blended together and we all, no matter whether we came from Italy or Germany or Spain or France or Mexico, we all melted together and became one great new country. And we were proud to be a part of that melting pot. And now the word that when was the last time you heard the word melting pot used?
Today the word
is diversity.
Right.
Oh, well, we have to embrace our diversity. But oh, by the way, now that we recognize that we're diverse, our diverse group is entitled to be jealous or angry or to have a grudge of every other diverse group because they must be getting special treatment or my group must be receiving particularly unfair treatment. So the identity of Americans as Americans is gone. It is not a part of our culture, and we don't see ourselves that way. We don't see ourselves as coming together. Look at Biden. The guy's swearing in ceremony was kind of the height of I'm going to bring America back together. I'm going to unify the nation from that terrible guy, Donald Trump. And he has been the single most divisive president I have ever seen. And the State of the Union the other day was the most stunningly divisive speech imaginable. Nobody on the face of the earth could defend that as a state of the Union. It was a state of his anger for half of us. It was a speech about the state of the woke sentiment about how evil at least half of us are, but it was not a description of the State of the Union.
This is why I worry about what you started with, our education system. We'll take a break and come back on this. This is a short segment. We'll have a longer one to explore this with. My friend, the Newsweek editor, Batya Unger-Sargon, says the Democratic Party has a manufacturing conveyor belt called the American University. And this is why I think our culture has changed to a point where 1776 itself has been irrelevant, which is the year that really was able to make us all one big family. And I'm going to say something about that and throw it your way when we come right back. John Shattuck is my guest, Congressman Shattuck, head of Shattuck and Associates. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, coming to you from the 960 Patriot Broadcast Studios, brought to you by the veteran-owned Midas Gold Group, your trusted source for precious metal. You lit up, John Shattuck. John Shattuck is my guest. You lit up a little with the song Mrs. Robinson from the movie The Graduate.
Right.
Great movie.
Great movie.
And you and I were just saying off air, the irony, inherent irony of the movie was, I think by most standards, Mrs. Robinson, the mom, was a little prettier than Elaine Catherine Ross. Do you know there was only 11 years difference between the mom and the daughter in real life?
Is that right?
Catherine Ross is only 11 years younger than Mrs. Robinson. But gosh, what a funny movie and sign of the times.
Yeah, great sign of the times. Very interesting. But you know, understood by everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody in the society could relate
right.
to it.
Yeah.
It wasn't that this is a trope about what's wrong with
right.
society.
Right.
It's just, look, we're all,
yeah.
you know, a huge chunk of people are dealing with these issues.
Yeah, a lot.
And look how interesting or fascinating
you
they
know,
can be.
Everything from marital issues to alcoholism,
yep.
to lots of things going on there. All right. Anyway, let me go back to identity politics and why I think the effort to suppress our understanding of history is so important on this point. For if we get rid of this notion from 1776 in our creation of equality and liberty, how can we be one nation? Abraham Lincoln gives
us yeah, I was going to say, one nation. It's not
yeah.
it's not different nations.
Right. It's one
it's
nation.
It's not 50 nations
no.
Under God.
No.
It's one nation
yeah.
under God.
And now we don't even blink at two national anthems.
No. Well, and is it just two?
Someone's going to argue for a third and a fourth. Abraham Lincoln at a July 4th speech in 1858, Independence Day speech in 1858, gives what's known as the electric cord speech, and he's addressing people in the audience who are immigrants, who did not know the founding generation. And he says, they find themselves here are equal in all things. If they look back through history to trace their connection with the days by blood of ours, they find none. They cannot carry themselves back into that glorious epic and make themselves feel that they are part of us. But when they look at that old Declaration of Independence, they find that those old men that say we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, they can feel that the moral sentiment taught in that day evidences their relation to those men. For it is the father of all moral principle in them, and they have a right to claim it as though they were the blood of the blood and flesh of the men who wrote that declaration. And so they are. For that is the electric cord that links the hearts of patriotic, liberty-loving men together, that will link patriotic hearts as long as the love of freedom exists in the minds of men throughout the world. There was something important that we have equally tossed out that makes the melting pot impossible. That's what I think. That's what I think. The huge effort to get rid of 1776 and 1619. Joe Biden did a lot on his first day in office. A lot. One of the things he did was take down Hillsdale and Claremont's 1776 project, which was to teach American history. That was done on the first day, too.
They want to destroy patriotism.
Go ahead.
They clearly want to destroy the vision of America as it has come to exist or had in the 50s, 60s, and 70s come to exist. They see it as the enemy. And in part, it's the enemy because it is self-rule. And of course, they don't believe in self-rule. They believe in rule by the enlightened who know better what's good for us. Electric cars and electric stoves, not gas stoves. And
so much water in a toilet.
All right. How much water?
So much heat in your shower.
And on and on and on. It occurs to me that that's an ongoing and constant theme. But one of the things we haven't done, I don't think, is to look closely at how is it that we were, in fact, one nation under God, and we were in the 50s, 60s, 70s unified. And at one time, we, as a nation, said, a chicken in every pot was a good thing for everybody, and a car in every driveway was a good thing for everybody. And it occurs to me that the founding generations of this country instinctively understood something we didn't. They did not come from unity. They did not come from one nation. They came from a world made up of dozens of small nations who were intensely tied to their history and had enmities going back centuries, kind of like the Middle East now. Germany had to hate France because Germany was Germany and France was France. And of course, she had to hate them. And the English had to hate the Irish because, well, that's what we do. And so when the United States held out this banner and said, we're not going to be a slew of divided nations with lifelong, permanent, arguably irrational or less than fully rational enmities, we're going to create one nation under God, and we're going to bring those people together. And so when they came and learned that this is what that was what this country was about, being a nation, having pride in the nation, but having pride in its principles, equal justice under the law, the rule of law. And
a Republican form of government, which Joe Biden keeps talking about a democracy. I used to think that the distinction was kind of rhetorically not as important as it is. It's important.
He doesn't understand.
He doesn't understand it.
In any event, so it took a much longer time for us to drift away from the unity and patriotism of the earlier years to the division of the era of identity politics. But it's made a big difference. And actually, examined by history, the truth is the division of old Europe or of the old world, where enmities defined everybody, was not a successful model. It makes sense that we said, no, we don't want that. We don't need to have the belief that just because you are different, we must be enemies. So the founders and the people embraced the notion of enmity, of unity, that is, yeah, and of one nation under God, and of people understanding, as I've argued here, that if the neighbor does well today and gets a new car or has a chicken in his pot, or today I guess it would be a prime filet, that's good for all of us, because we were unified. We were not laden with enmities that went back hundreds, and maybe even if you look at parts of the old world, you look at Turkey, you look at some of those countries, enmities that were completely irrational, but wound up in people killing each other for generations.
It's such a great point. Those enmities, those animosities were to be reduced here, were to be suppressed here, were to be erased here. They were meant to be meaningless here.
Right.
And we have one party that is trying to recreate it, which recreates animosity. I show you the times.
And a media that desperately wants to recreate them.
Yep. John Shattuck, bless you, sir.
Hey, a lot of fun.
Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show, portions of which are brought to you by our good friends at YRefi. They offer up a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio that really invests you with flexibility and control. With YRefi, you can turn your income on or off. You can compound it, whatever you like. With YRefi, there is no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. You, of course, get a monthly statement with no surprises. And with YRefi, there are absolutely no fees. But best of all, with YRefi, you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com, or give them a call at 888-YRefi24. I was making reference to this in my opening comments in the first hour, not particularly a monologue, but just thinking out loud about this notion of democracy and the rhetorical use of that phrase in describing America. And people used to raise red flags when politicians would speak of our democracy because they wanted it known that we were a Republican form of government and not a democracy per se. And it took me a long time not to understand the distinction, but to understand the importance of political leaders not confusing the two. William Buckley wrote that the commitment by the liberals to democracy has proved obsessive, even fetishistic. It is part of their larger absorption in method, and method is the flesh pod of those who live in metaphysical deserts. Even though democracy is a mere procedure, all the hopes of an epoch were vested in it. Intellectuals have tended to look upon democracy as an extension of the scientific method, as the scientific method applied to social problems. In an age of relativism, one tends to look for flexible devices for measuring this morning's truth. Such a device is democracy, and indeed democracy becomes epistemology. Democracy will render reliable political truths just as surely as the marketplace sets negotiable economic values. The democracy of universal suffrage is not a bad form of government. It is simply not necessarily nor inevitably a good form of government. Democracy must be justified by its works, not by doctrinaire affirmations of an intrinsic goodness that no mere method can legitimately lay claim to. William Buckley, up from liberalism. Folks, thanks for spending some of your afternoon with us. On behalf of David, Mr. Bill, and Terry, God bless you all. And until tomorrow, class is dismissed.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.